Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
We're always talking about those things that we think have an impact on your life in some form or fashion. Not everyone. Some of you are heading in that direction. Some of you are in this situation. Some of you have already been through it. For instance, my first guest is David Welliver. He's founder of Money Under 30. Now, you'll learn more about what this all means. But, you know, I have a 23-year-old, or will be this month, who graduated from Franklin and Marshall. And he hits the mark so keenly on money under 30, understanding the unique concerns of millennials. He's all of that. So I'm living it right now. And David has some thoughts on that and has founded a company that deals with life from that perspective. And he'll be along in just a few minutes. And then one of the things I probably get more letters from you about: how do I write a book? How do I get started? How do I know it's right? Shall I use an editor? Do I need an agent? How much is it going to cost? I get that. And so I've got a person who's going to answer that. Alexandra Hamlet has written a book. She's an author and an anthropologist. So she's not doing this because she has to. She wrote a book because she wanted to. And she's going to tell you how it went for her and how it might go for you. Huh? So, and right here, all of that coming up next. But right now, we're going to turn to David Welliver, who joins us because I received information about him. Life after college is more than transitioning into the workforce. And then I look at his bio. He's founding editor of Money Under 30. He lives near Portland, Maine. He has a wife, two young kids, and since 2006, he's been blogging about beating debt, increasing your earnings, and investing wisely while you're young. And then he explains why he started the site. So I'm very pleased. David, welcome to Home and Family Finance.
Well, thank you, Paul. Thank you so much for having me.
How much different is graduating from college today than when you graduated?
It is quite different. I'm 34 now, so I graduated, geez. it's hard to imagine, but over 10 years ago. And, you know, when I graduated college, there was my problem is I went into credit card debt both in college and in the years immediately after when I was, you know, trying to start working in my career and not earning very much as recent graduates usually typically don't.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, living a life that was above my means, which is one of the most dangerous things you can do financially, the most dangerous thing you can do financially.
Sure.
And today, I think with the recession that happened in 2008, 2009, a lot of the people who are graduating today from college are more aware of the dangers of that kind of consumer debt. Student loans have become even more of a problem than they were 10 years ago. If you look at the statistics, the average debt graduates are graduating with keeps going up, and the percentage of graduates with student debt keeps going up.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas when I graduated from college and when I started Money Under 30, I was working at fixing the credit card debt that I created. It was solely my fault. Whereas today, most of my readers are struggling with student loans that they thought was a good decision. You know, they didn't think that borrowing this much, they thought student debt is good debt. You know, I'm getting this degree, it's going to be okay.
Right.
And the reality is, it's really hard to start your life when you're burdened with $20,000, $30,000, sometimes much more in student debt.
That is what either he... In this case, my son, this is the third, by the way, David, and for my audience, all three have graduated from college. But there's debt. That debt is what I share right now, I handle, although it is partly their responsibility. I'm having difficulty paying off their debt. They come out looking like deer in the headlights. When you graduated, you were in that situation. But you hustled, you say, to pay off the debt. How did you do it?
Well, and hustle is the right word, I think. I think it comes down to a mindset that if you're fed up with it, you know, you have to take matters into your hands and do things that you may not like for a few years anyway to aggressively work on it. You can cut your spending, and certainly that's the first place to look if you've got, you know, a brand new car lease that you don't really need, or you're living in too big of an apartment you know, if you've got some really big expenses that are unnecessary, mm-hmm. if you can take on a couple roommates to half or a third your rent, if you can trade in the new car you bought or leased for something that's much older and costs a fifth of
yeah.
the
or, price. Or you were given a car. A brand new car, and that's great, yeah. Uncle so-and-so. But there's no sin, there's no crime to sell it to pay off debt, is there?
That's a great point. Yeah, that would be an easy win.
My son has a friend who graduated who said to Paul, I can't sell the car. It was a gift. You can sell the car, folks. Hopefully they will understand that the reason you did it is because you're trying to live.
I think if you explained, you know, this was a very generous gift. It's a beautiful car. I loved it. But I'm trying to be responsible and forward thinking with my money, and the best thing for me right now is to sell this car and to use that to pay down my student loans or to start an emergency fund so I have a beginning of some security. Certainly, that would be a no-brainer, I think.
I think so. My guest is David Welliver. He is a graduate. He has started the blog is Money Under 30. When we come back, we'll talk about personal finance, being good with money, focusing on the future, the things that you need to grab hold of, young folks. And maybe with the help of parents' understanding, we can get something done that's positive. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And David Welliver is my guest. He's founder of Money Under 30. It's a blog that you can read. What's the point? Are you saying if you do these things, good things are going to happen to you?
I certainly hope so. You know, Money Under 30 is all about helping you build a foundation for your financial life. You know, we don't always want to look at this stuff and to think about the big picture when we're in our 20s. I certainly didn't. And that's why I spent the first few years of my 20s until I was about 25 putting my head in the sand when it came to budgeting. And if you can do whatever you can do when you're young, it just will amplify, you know, for your career and help you build wealth. And it comes down to whether you aggressively pay down your debt, like we were talking about, if you start investing in the stock market, or if you simply manage your career wisely and you negotiate your salary and you work hard and try to get promoted, because these things will have a ripple effect throughout your entire life.
You were there. I mean, you got there. You had no money, no savings, nothing. What you did, as I read it, is you went to work. You reduced the debt, you know, you sacrificed. And so doing, you started to get a foothold.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And we talked in the first segment about hustling. And, I if you had big expenses that you can trim, that's great. But most people have very little, you know, they're spending the minimum already, and they're trying to get ahead. And so what it comes down to is, okay, how can I increase my income? I hustled at work so I would get recognized and promoted. Mm-hmm. I used that to get a slightly higher paying job at another company. And at the same time, I took a part-time job at Starbucks. And I did that for a few years and put all of that money towards my debt. I was very tired, and I was missing out on some of the fun that my other 26-year-old friends were having. But it really paid off, because in just a few years, I managed to pay off a large amount of debt. And then all of a sudden, I was, you know, in my later 20s, but I was, you know, in a great financial position. You know, the hustling, it's not fun, but it's not forever. And once you do it for a few years, it'll start to pay dividends throughout your entire life.
Where did you find the discipline to do what you did?
It took a year or two of trying and failing until it stuck. Everybody fails. You should try to fail, you know, because as long as you're failing, you're making progress. You're trying. Mm-hmm. I tried, you know, moving into a less costly living situation with several roommates. I tried watching my budget down to the penny every month, but it wasn't producing the kind of results I wanted. And that's when I realized that if I wanted to pay this debt off faster, I'd have to earn more money. And so I got that second job. And, you know, once you get into the habit of having that second job and you start seeing the balances go down and the savings account go up, it starts to hook you a little bit. You know, you get that positive reinforcement. And so the struggle becomes a little bit easier.
It is true. There's nothing quite as attractive and quite as alluring as a savings account that is yours and it's growing.
It does. And something really interesting happened when I made that transition from paying off debt to all of a sudden that was gone. And so the money I was earning and putting towards that was now going into a savings account. And as you go from having nothing, you know, being having a negative net worth, to all of a sudden having money in a savings account, your relationship with money changes. And I think you become far more aware of how much things cost and the value of a dollar. So you start to spend more carefully because you've accumulated something and you want to protect that.
Were you angry? Did coming out of school with your diploma in one hand and a raft of bills in the other, were you angry about the system that put you in that position?
Temporarily, yes. But, you know, unlike many, many people's situations that I hear about, a lot of my debt was my fault. I had some student loans. You know, I had about $20,000, $25,000 of student loans. But everything else I added myself. I spent on credit cards when I shouldn't have. I went out and bought a new car and financed that. You know, I was angry for a little bit, but then I really had nobody to blame but myself. That also motivated me to fix it. You know, I realized it was my fault and I had to undo it.
If somebody's listening and they want to hear, want to read more or, you know, find out more about what you're saying, where do they go?
They go to moneyunder30.com, and it's moneyunder30.com. It's chock full of over 1,000 articles, all free, on advice ranging from paying down debt to beginning to save and invest and the steps that you want to take. You know, whether you just graduated or you're in your mid to late 20s and you're just trying to get a foothold, as you said.
Do you make money with this blog? Do you sell it? Do people pay for it? I mean,
I do. Yeah, it's been very fortunate. You know, I started this as a hobby about 10 years ago to just talk about paying down debt. You know, it was when I was in the thick of it. And it's grown, I think, because there is such a need for financial advice that it's now a business. It's my full-time living, and we have advertisers, you know, companies that want you to open a savings account with them or invest with them, and you know, they advertise on the site, so that pays the bills.
Well, that's great. That's great. When we come back, I want to ask you what you see in the future here. I mean, I think you speak to and for a generation. A lot of people out there that are listening that say, okay, I hear you. I want to know what you think is going to happen here. And I want you, some of them also think that if they wait long enough, the government's just going to wipe out their student loans. Ain't going to happen. When we come back, we'll talk more with David Welliker. Stay with us. Family Finance on Radio America. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. Home and Family Finance is all about you, about being financially sound, being financially literate. We thank our program sponsors, the Defense Credit Union Council, and CUNA, the Credit Union National Association, for their work. My guest is David Welliker. He is right. His blog is called Money Under 30, that's moneyunder30.com, and it's designed to give advice to young folks coming out of college and making that transition, making what I think you just said, David, is kind of you're living in a bubble for a while before you really realize what's going on out there. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Paul. I mean, I know it was a few years out in the real world. You know, I had a job, I was living on my own, but I still didn't get the reality of bills and what it meant to manage my money and the importance of, you know, paying for health insurance and investing for retirement. It didn't seem real for quite a while. And the sooner you can take charge of that stuff, the better. And I knew people who, for whatever reason, their upbringing or just their personality, started doing this stuff in high school. You know, mm-hmm. They had an IRA when they were 16. But that's not, I don't think, the majority, and it certainly wasn't me. And for most of us, the real world is quite a shock, and it just is. And so, you know, when you're ready, I often say, you know, when you're ready, my sight is there for you. I can't force this stuff on you, but when you're ready to kind of take charge, it's all there.
Yeah, I got it. And personal finance is personal. Let me ask you something, and I want you to judge me. I have three children, 27, 25, and 22, soon to be 23. I pay for their life insurance. I pay for their telephones. I pay for their health, for their medical insurance. I everything, right down to the cell phones. And I've never made them pay for those things. I paid for them because not only did I love them, but I could afford to do it. But in so doing, David, did I do them a disservice? Have I left them in a position where they're not really able to function because they never had to function?
Possibly. I don't know. I've had friends, in similar situations, and I have readers in similar situations. And I think at some point, you're delaying a transition, I think, because presumably you won't pay for their cell phone forever. They may enjoy, other financial support for you in the long run. But I guess it depends on what they're doing, how they're managing the rest of their money. If they're saving because they don't have to pay their cell phone, great. But if they're just living a lifestyle that they couldn't afford, without their cell phone and health insurance, life insurance paid, then you may want to reconsider. I think, like you said, personal finance is personal, and this is one situation where it very much depends on, on the individual. So each of your kids may be different. One may be taking that advantage they have with your help and using it very well, whereas the other one may be squandering it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, and you're right. I mean, they don't all do the same things. And I've often thought about how important it would have been for me to have made them more financially responsible early on so that a dollar, it means something. They understand the worth of a dollar. We grew up in my lifetime, with very little. And so when I had a chance to have my children, I wanted them to have much more and to enjoy life more. But I'm not sure it's always such a good thing to do. I just don't know. But I think, David, I think it's one of those issues that we all have to look at from my perspective as the parent and from their perspective as the now young adult, not a child anymore. And I think that's part of something what you're trying to convey. If I get you right, that's the issue that you're trying to say is, come on, get aboard here and take responsibility for yourself.
That's exactly it. It's because at the end of the day, nobody's going to look out for all of your financial interests. You have to do that on your own. And we were saying before the break, with the future and student loans, and a lot of people are hoping that, they pay for 10 years and then the federal government will forgive their student loans, or they're putting off, saving for retirement because Social Security is there, and you just can't rely on anything, especially the federal government, if you're looking 10, 20, 30 years down the road, because who knows what's going to happen.
That's right. What is not likely to happen? Go ahead.
One constant is what you do with your money today, will help you tomorrow.
You're in control of your money if you take care of it now, because the government may or may not forgive student loans, but there's no promise of that, as you well know. I thank you for being here. I thank you for your candor, as I said, and for your directness. And I hope young people that are listening and folks that are not so young that are involved with the parenting or the support of, we all hear you, that everybody has to live their own life. And thank you for living yours. Come back and see us again soon.
Thank you so much for having
me, Paul. You bet. It was a pleasure. Coming up next, so you want to write a book? Well, maybe not after you hear what I'm going to tell you, or at least my guest is. That's next.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
It's always a pleasure to have you out there listening to what I'm doing in here. And I hope what I'm doing in here, I know what I'm doing in here today is what you want me to do, because I get more letters about this than almost anything else. I want to write a book. I'd like to write a book. Should I write a book? What do I write about? How expensive? Do I need an agent? Are things changed? On and on and on. I don't know, but you know what I do know? I know people that do, and I have one of them in the studio with me right now. Her name is Alexandra Hamlet. She is the author of The Right Guard. She is an author and she is an anthropologist. She is a professional woman. So she's not writing this book because she needs the money. But we'll find out why she did write the book in just a moment. But before we get to her, I want to get to this. As you know, the Defense Credit Union Council and its member credit unions believe that financial readiness equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of Military Saves in their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops. Military Saves is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, support, and encourage military families to save money, reduce debt, and, of course, to build wealth. As part of the Department of Defense's Financial Readiness Campaign, Military Saves acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. Military Save. Save sets a goal, makes a plan, saves automatically. That's what you need to do if you're going to make this work for you. Go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. I hope you do that because, and by the way, you don't have to be in the military to save. Saving is good for everybody, and when you do, you feel so good. You got all that money sitting up there, and you control it, and it's all yours. I suspect that it's probably making money may have been one of the reasons that Alexandra Hamlet decided that she was going to write a book. And the reviews are fantastic. Some folks say, there's no more critical audience in terms of writing, especially if you're writing about the military and the machine and how it works, than right here. But just some fantastic responses. Let me first of all welcome you to Home and Family Finance. Nice to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Paul. A pleasure to be here.
No, you didn't have to write a book, did you?
No.
I mean, was this a lifelong dream?
I wanted to write since I was 11 years old.
Really?
And in fact, I wrote my first novel at 13.
Okay.
No, it wasn't published.
But what was the satisfaction for you? I mean, what did it, when you did this, did it, relieve some tension or did it scratch an itch? I mean, how did it feel?
Great question. I think people are driven to do this, just like they're driven to the arts in any other area, driven to any other interest that they have. I actually had a very expensive, this was before computers, typewriter I had once years ago, many years ago. And I sold the thing to use the money to go to Canada on a travel trip. I thought, I'm never going to write again. I came back and bought another typewriter.
You got another. Was in you.
This was ancient times. Yeah. But it's a drive. You don't do it. You don't write because you like it. You write because you're driven to it, and you can't stop it.
Is it hard?
Yes.
It is hard.
Somebody once said, writing is easy. All you do is sit at the computer, keyboard, and open up a vein. It is a struggle. It is sometimes much of what you write about is personal. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to get out on paper in front of you. I had to write a few sex scenes in the right guard, and I have four brothers. And, of course.
Really, sis?
Yeah,
really, sis?
I know. I had some real interesting questions. And they said, so you know all about this. I said, I'm a married woman. I know everything.
Yeah, yeah. I know what I need to know, right? Before we get into other folks who want to know about this.
Sure.
The book, this is the most realistic novel I've read about what it feels like to be in the field as a case officer. And that's said by a senior member of the intelligence community, a former caseworker. So when you get folks like that making comments like this about your book, in a nutshell, what is your book about? What did you write about?
It is a military suspense thriller based on real events and my life. I was a defense anthropologist for a long time. I had access to some interesting situations. And it's about a potential takeover of the United States from within. Each chapter begins with a clip from a newspaper clipping, probably one of the few novels that has references in the beginning of its chapter. Mm-hmm. All those references are real. And based on information from people that I gathered. Now, to answer a question I know is going to come up, yes, it was vetted. I sent it to the intelligence community basically before I put it out. I said, take a look.
And you were required to do that in this case.
I think a lot of people are, since I was going to have it published as fiction anyway. Maybe not, but they basically said, go forth and do good.
Okay. So, the name of the book, The Right Guard, by Alexandra Hamlet. It can be found at the Better Bookstores everywhere. So if you're interested, and I'm reading it right now. As a matter of fact, I had hoped to finish this, except life gets in the way. I have somebody calls and says, you got to be here. But I'm looking forward to finishing it. But let's talk about the whole idea of doing this. You did it. How does a new writer get published now? And did you go that route or has it changed?
Oh, gosh. Publishing has changed so much. And about 3 years ago, in talking with agents and specialists in that field, they said the publishing industry had dropped down about 40%. Mm-hmm. That may have been true in the book market. But what happened was digital publishing, the ability for people to put their information online and blogs, self-publishing online, and then being published by entities online, professional publishing entities. It blew the publishing industry out of the water. And I think, this is a personal opinion, those who weren't prepared for it and jumped in didn't do very well in the marketplace and otherwise. But what this opened up is that people who want to can get their information out there. It is easier. It's hard for people to believe this, but it's easier to get published now than it was because of the e-publishing possibilities that are out there.
Right. So you decided, okay, to write this book. I mean,
right.
to write a real book and publish the book.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk. Content is one thing, and project is another. This was a project to write a book,
right.
But the content is quite different,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean,
well, I was a defense anthropologist for about 14 years.
I don't know what that is.
Well, worked on. Let me see. See the best I can explain it in a couple of sentences. I worked on projects where there were crisis in cultural
yes.
situations, whether it was with a group of people in the Pentagon, whether it was working with tribal information, basically trying to find out what were the hidden agendas for the crisis and trying to help resolve them.
Okay, so we get that. All right. I'm fascinated to find out what you found out in terms of publishing. We're going to stop for just a minute and take a break. My guest is Alexandra Hamlet. Her book is called The Right Guard. She's in studio. We're talking about what you need to do if you've got the bug that she got and maybe still has. We'll find out about that, too. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
Now, my guest is Alexandra Hamlet. She is a writer, a novel. Her novel is The Right Guard, which is can be picked up at any of the better bookstores around the country, wherever you might be. All right, I'm going to assume, Alexandra, is that somebody's got a story. We can spend all day talking about what you write about a memoir and all this. But what I want to get to is the mechanics of this that you had to go through. How much did it cost you? From you said, okay, I want to write a book, and then who did you go pay the book, or did you get an? I mean, what were the mechanics here that you had to deal with?
My situation was probably quite different from others because I was interested in the marketing side and maybe spent, you know, a great deal more than somebody else would have.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to understand, new writers coming out these days, publishers pay very little for marketing. There's a certain budget. Usually it's extremely small. So if you're serious about this, you're going to have to do some of it on your own, pay some of it on your own. However, let me tell you, you can do this in a lot of ways that are free, and that is through clubs, through getting into writers' groups. You can buy a booth at a book festival for $30 for the day, and you can hand out cards and information on your book to 500 to 2,000 people.
So you can do a little bit of your own marketing.
Absolutely you can. I mean, I know well-known authors who do have publishers. Mm-hmm. They still don't do that much in the way of marketing. So they get out and do it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Radio shows, standing up in ladies' clubs. I can't tell you the numbers of authors that and famous ones who put books in the back of their trunk and, you know, run around on the club circuit.
Do I need an agent? Okay.
Okay.
I've heard, I don't know, I'm excited. I got to have an agent. So how much do I have to pay this agent to publish or to help me do the book?
You shouldn't be paying anything for an agent, for a legitimate agent. They are interested in your work. They're going to make money off of you selling your work. And, you know, the fate to be with you, if it's picked up for film or a television series, that's where an agent really begins to do very well as you. But they should be making money from a percentage off of what you make.
And how do I find that? If in fact, I go that direction, how do I find a good agent?
Well, word of mouth. Remain visible. As I said, when you do the club agents, eventually somebody will see you and say, I know of someone. You can get online. There are actually sites for writers that recommend reputable mm-hmm. agents. And just like any other service, people write reviews. You can see online reviews of what people have had, you know, with agents. Now, you have to take some of this with a grain of salt, because if somebody's book isn't picked up right away, it's the agent's fault. You know, not necessarily. But I think if you look online enough and look at many reviews, you'll see a trend of who's good and who maybe you should avoid.
Self-doubt. My goodness, self-doubt. I mean, I want to write a book. You got to be kidding. I can't write a book. I'm not a, come on.
Anybody can write a book.
I mean, I just feel.
Well, let me tell you.
I'm just not good enough with the story. I mean, how do I, come on, get me through this. I mean,
all right. You can sit down and write a memoir. Maybe your family member has had an incredible experience. It could be a family experience, a personal experience, professional. For instance, if you're in a profession where it, you know, there's a lot of how-to information that will help people, you can actually write a nonfiction book. You can submit it to a publisher with an outline and three sample chapters, and they can pass that on or not just on that.
They'll review it? They'll look at it?
Yeah, of course they will. And you've got to pick a topic that's timely. What are timely topics? It could be a point of view on something. Mm-hmm. It could be a passion for something or a great idea. Some of the top-selling books out there now are cookbooks.
Yeah.
People who are writing with ethnic backgrounds, you know, my grandmother's recipes. Anything. One Minute Manager, remember that?
Sure.
That book went all around the world. Or A Chicken Soup for the Soul. These are ideas that people had for doing better in business or a passion mm-hmm. that they had. Mm-hmm. It could be on anything.
What you're saying is stick to your idea. If this is what you want to do, start to do it. And if you do it and you get out there, there are mileposts that will help you along the way.
Let me give you some. First suggestion is learn about your craft.
Okay.
You have to know something about writing. Now, I'm going to go back to online again because there are novel template programs. There are novel outline programs that can help you outline your novel. If you're trying to look for a topic, read good books. What are you interested in? Mm-hmm. Look at the books on the bestseller list, fiction and nonfiction. What is the people are buying? You can take a course on writing, get into a writing group for free. Book festivals, writers' conferences, writers' magazines. If you look in a Writer's Digest magazine, comes out every month, there's a list of conferences in the back, and Writer's Digest has online courses. So it is all available. You're going to have to do with any other subject, get into the subject, the meat of it, and explore it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And was that – what part of any of that is expensive? And I got a minute left in the segment. Any what's the most expensive part of this?
Not really. Entrance to a book festival, maybe $20. Go around and talk to authors. Mm-hmm. Talk to them and say, how did you get into the business? An online course, maybe $50 to $100. That's kind of expensive. But you can read about it in a book in the library. You can go to the library and get the writer's magazines for free. Online, a huge amount of information is available free online.
Yeah. What I hear you saying is, if you really want to do this, do it. I mean, I hear what you're saying here is that, okay, I can give you 1,000 reasons why I didn't do it.
The only thing stopping you is you.
Alexandra Hamlet, the right guard. She's here in studio. When we come back, some more nuggets of information. Stay with us. Family Finance. I am your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you so much for joining us. My guest is Alexandra Hamlet. She has written a book, The Right Guard. It is a novel, a fiction, a fictional story that she has put into a very interesting book that's well received. And she's in studio with us because I thought, who better to tell you about this business of writing, and that's something that I get so many different letters and calls about. I want to write a book, and how do I do it, and how much does it cost, and where do I go? And okay, so now we've gotten through a number of things that you can do this. You got to, it's, you know, you can do the job, and so you either decide to be to either self-publish, go it alone, or self-publish or not. So that's where we are now. Okay,
okay.
I've listened to you. I'm convinced. You know, I'm going to do this. What do I do?
All right. If you're interested in self-publishing, let me give you some pointers of what's out there. First of all, let's talk about some famous self-published books. Beatrix Potter, The Adventures of Peter Rabbit, In Search of Excellence, Tom Peters. Elements of Style by William Strunk, Deepak Chopra, Zane Grey, Carl Sandburg.
All self-published.
Let's take a more modern one. Let's talk about John Grisham. the book A Time to Kill. It was turned down by 15 publishers, 30 agents, and he ended up publishing himself. Now, he was picked up after that. That's what is happening with a lot of with a lot of writers.
They get picked up after.
They get picked up.
But you got to do it yourself. You got to get out there first.
In some cases, you do, Paul. In others, you're picked up right away. It's just the roll of the dice in some of it. John Locke, you can look online. John Locke put his book on Kindle, put it online, and he sold over 1 million copies. In fact, 1,010,730 copies in a very short time. He belongs to Kindle's Million Club. Now, this is a guy that wrote a book and put it online, and he joins the club of Stieg Larsson, Nora Roberts, Michael Connelly, I mean, James Patterson, all those guys.
So this freedom, if you will, it has created a better place for a would-be writer. Things are better today than they were 20 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. There are over 700 notable writers who've self-published in the beginning of their careers. And you've got some very good ones. There are many out there. I couldn't name all of them.
Right.
But people like CreateSpace, Amazon, Lulu, Ex Libris, Bookmasters, all of them have different programs. Some of your books could be print on demand. Some of them could be just ebooks.
Right.
If they want to order the book, they can have a print on demand. They're all different programs. If you're serious about this, you've got to get yourself out there somehow.
Okay. So steps are, I've got something to write about. I know what that is. Good or bad, it's what I want to write about. Number two, just start going online, finding out about things that I need to know about, right?
In terms of organizing your novel.
Yeah, right. And organizing the novel. And just, in other words, learning how to do it. And it's all out there for me at this
point. And then joining groups. The reason I suggest writers' groups, gosh, they were the best that ever happened to me because they critique your work. Everybody gets in a circle. Sometimes there's a glass of wine, a Coke, a cup of coffee.
And they actually go through and say.
Oh, absolutely. And they're great. They're great critics.
No kidding.
Yes.
So
free.
Go there and sit with them and let them say.
Yeah. That's what they live for. Not only, and so everybody gets a chance to read their work in an evening. People talk about it, what they like, what they don't.
Do you read a segment of what you've written?
Sometimes it's the whole thing of what you have. Sometimes
and that doesn't cost you anything except getting there.
No, that's right.
Wow, this is exciting. I mean, okay, folks, I'm giving you from someone who has done this exactly what it takes. And if you're inspired by it, then so be it. She was inspired enough to write her book, The Right Guard, by Alexandra Hamlet. That's Hamlet. You can find her book, where Amazon and everybody.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Everybody else.
Online.
You're going to write another one?
Oh, yeah. There'll be two more in this series.
Have you got the bug? Are you?
Oh, yeah. I'm in it now. I'm in it. It's for real.
Yeah, you got to do it. And you encourage others to do it as well if that's what they want.
Oh, I do. With my book, now it's gotten to the point where people are interested in film. My husband and I actually got a call one day from someone out in Hollywood, and they said, between Zero and the Universe, what do you want for your book?
Wow.
That's the call that everybody waits
for. That's what you get. That's what you want to get.
That's what you get. So we're negotiating. Contracts are floating. Nothing solid yet, but we're looking into it.
All right. Again, The Right Guard, a novel by Alexandra Hamlet. She's had thank you for taking your time. I know you're busy. I think your hubby said 43 interviews and counting. But that's a good thing, isn't it? I mean,
it is.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Well, it's good to have you here in studio with us. Come back and see us again.
Thank you, Paul. What a pleasure.
It's my pleasure. Folks, I hope you enjoyed this. I've answered your call. I hear you. And when you send me information, we try to cover that as well. Al Peterson, thank you very much for the time. And thank you, folks, for tuning in. We'll be here again next week. We hope you will, too. Have a good day.